listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
Welcome in to another episode of the Launchpad Podcast presented by Apollo Media. As always, I'm your host, Don Knock. You can follow me on Twitter at Don Knock. You know, all the stuff goes there. Joined by my co-host, Paolo, aka Prod. Prod, go ahead and tell the people where they can find all your stuff.
What's up, everyone? You can find me at Paul Alves NBA. That's PAULOALVESNBA. Everything I do, from podcasts to live shows to articles, will find itself there.
And as per usual Thursday show, we are joined by Jackson Gatlin. Jackson, go ahead and tell the people where they can find all your stuff as well.
At JT Gatlin, that's where all the stuff is.
Perfect, perfect. And for today's show, we're going to start off with a little bit of a phenomenon that was brought on by Jackson. So Jackson, we will start with you. Go ahead and take all the credit you would like for Coach Silas, you know, fixing his rotations. You know, if they're going to bring you on as an analyst, you know, this would be the perfect place to break that news as well. And, you know, how is your coaching career going to go from here once, you know, obviously, you know, you're very successful in media, but I think coaching may be in your future.
Yeah, it's going to be really sad when I have to hang up the microphone and give up podcasting and the media gambit to become the new lead assistant for the Houston Rockets. No, look, I don't want to take credit. I'm not taking credit for this, right? This is, you know, obviously I'm asking the, I think the one takeaway is that I'm asking the right questions because, right, Steven Silas decided that he was going to move away from the staggered lineups in this game against the San Antonio Spurs. And so pregame, he thought it was kind of, he was amused by the fact that I was asking about the staggered lineups. He was basically like, you know, I'm just trying to get all these data points on what it's like for Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green to be sharing the floor with each other. And, you know, that's basically exclusively what we saw over these last like 3-4 games was those two guys mirroring each other's minutes. And then post game, I followed up with Steven Silas and was like, so, hey, you know, you go into this game and I'm asking you about the staggering pregame, and then you decide you're not going to stagger, or you are going to stagger them tonight. And he followed up by saying, you know, it was just, he said he was laughing, you know, during pregame because he already had made up his mind that he was going to stagger them in this game against the Spurs, and basically highlighted the fact that at times, right, when they're both out there, sometimes one is on the attack, whereas one isn't on the attack. And he thinks they're at their best when they're both playing incredibly aggressive basketball. And so I think that's something that we've kind of seen over these last 3 or 4 games is, when Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green are out there sharing the floor together, it does oftentimes seem like one of them is kind of dominating the basketball a bit more than the other. And oftentimes that one dominating the basketball tends to be Kevin Porter Jr. because I do think Jalen Green kind of defers to him a little bit because there's not really a clear hierarchy in the Rockets, you know, offense, whereas, you know, okay, who's option one, who's option two, that kind of thing. I think there's a couple guys who think they should be option one. I think there's a couple guys we'd like to see be option number one, and they're not. But it was pretty cool to see Steven Silas kind of acknowledge that question. And I think it means that, you know, as media, at least, we're asking the right questions and trying to figure out what's going on with this Rockets team and trying to discern further information from him and from what we're seeing with the on-the-court product.
Prod, jumping over to you now, you know, they went to the stagger.
His name is Paolo. Excuse you.
he's told me he still goes by Prod if we want to call him that, and it's just, you know, force of habit. But
I'm gonna screw up Paolo. I'm gonna screw up and call him Prowlo or something. Like, I'm just gonna mesh both names together.
I told him if we end up drafting you know, the other Paolo, he has to change his username to Paolo Fancaro. I think that'd be a nice little flip there.
Look, if the Rockets draft the other Paolo, then he'll be Paolo number two. Okay, I don't want to hear this. This is Paolo number one right here.
Okay, okay. I thought you meant our Paolo was going to be Paolo number two. I was like, okay, wow, we already throwing the wolves here. Okay, but yeah, you know,
honestly, no. Let's just hang on. I'm derailing one more time. Let's just rename the whole thing. Let's rename it to Al Paolo. Like, let's just that needs to be the new company name.
We'll run it by management, and you see how they feeling about it. But yeah, you know, over to you. How did you feel the stagger actually went? Right, you know, they went to it. Everyone wanted that. You know, the Rockets won the game, and that's the big lead in here. But you know, did you think the stagger really accomplished what it set out to do?
I mean, first off, you're not gonna say all of this about me and not allow me to speak on it. You can call me whatever. Just at the end of the day, once we're all like world level media people, DOGs can call me Prod, and then the new people can call me Paulo. You know, just setting that the record straight. And then about the stagger situation. I mean, Jalen did take, I think, 14 shots, and it did seem like when he was on the floor, while he might not have been handling the ball as much as some of us would have expected, the plays were run mostly for him, and even though he did take a lot of threes, it felt like he was still being aggressive. He was trying to get. He got to the line. I think he got 6 free throws. He challenged Poto like twice. I think he got blocked. That's not the smartest decision, but that's what you want to see. You want to see him be aggressive, and the Stagger did accomplish that. It didn't feel like one of those games where you just forget Jalen Green exists for an entire quarter. And then I also saw a lot of people, a lot of fans complain that he didn't get. Like he only came in with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and you've got to understand that they're trying new rotations. They're changing the rotations pretty often, and on the fly, maybe this is what Salas came up with. And I don't think it's necessarily wrong, because he didn't stay on the bench for long in the fourth quarter. He played the beginning of it, and then he played the end of it, which is what matters at the end of the day. So, I mean, kind of achieved some of the purpose. He did get more shots, but at the same time, I expect as they adapt and as they try this new iteration out, that he'll get the ball in his hands a lot more. And maybe that's past the deadline. Maybe after the deadline, Gordon doesn't get the ball, or Augustine doesn't get the ball, and he does. But I think there's time for everything. And if they're trying stuff out to gather data on a bunch of different stuff, it makes all the sense in the world.
So I think most people were thinking that when Jalen's getting in on the stagger, he's going to come in and just start spamming pick and roll over and over and over again. And that's really not what we saw, as you alluded to. He has ran pick and roll more successfully than I think a lot of people thought he was going to be able to coming into the league, especially from a passing and facilitating standpoint, right? His passing was one of the question marks, and people said, hey, you know, this guy's, you know, a volume scorer. And, you know, we'll see how the rest of his game ends up rounding out. You know, it's looked good to this point. The scoring, that's where people, you know, some people would expect him to be a little bit ahead of his development. He's starting, since coming back from injury, to really, you know, get close to that 15 to 20 points per game that most people thought he was going to average on the season coming in. What you also said, Prod, about after the deadline, we'll see what things look like. Last night in the game, it seemed like they were really letting Eric Gordon do a lot of ball handling with that unit where KPJ was out and Jalen was in. You know, Eric Gordon, again, had an incredible game. 9 for 10 from the field, 6 of 7 from 3, 7 of 10 from the free throw line. You know, great splits by him for 30 points. I would like to see once the, you know, everyone's assuming that Eric Gordon's going to get moved, right? You know, he's expressed that. It's been reported. Once he's gone, I think, A, you know, who do they bring back? It was floated around a Ricky Rubio and a first pick coming down for Eric Gordon in a trade with the Cavaliers. If you bring in a package like that, you know, Ricky Rubio is going to be out with an ACL injury. He's not going to play for the rest of the year. So it would make sense that, you know, maybe Augustine's still here. Christopher's obviously still here. Those guys can soak up some of the point guard minutes, but I think Christopher is more combo guardy than even Gordon is. I'm actually very high on Christopher's passing, but you know, just the way his role has been used, he hasn't been used as that much on ball the way they've used even Gordon. But I would still like to see Jalen get more pick and roll touches than he did even this game. There was a lot of DHO stuff. There was a lot of running off of screens still, and him shooting off of screens. And you know, they're not going to go away from that as much as the fan base, you know, wants him to be just used as, like we said, primary creator type of guy. They want that element in his game. So you know, Jackson, over to you now. You know, how do you feel about, you know, those things? You know, his roles changing again after the deadline, and, you know, him getting more of the pick and roll touches.
You know, I think there's a kind of a disconnect with Rockets fans, I think, where we're in this, still a lot of fans, I feel like, are in this adjustment period where for so many years, right, for almost an entire decade, this team was very accustomed to a very deliberate style of play where everything, 95% of touches were run through James Harden when he was on the floor, right? For the better part of the last 3 years, up until this most recent season, the first of the non, you know, James Harden era, fans were accustomed to very specific rotations, right? Where everything was catered in and around what Harden wanted to play, right? So we're so accustomed to that type of basketball that I think it's a fresh perspective for fans. And I think at times fans are struggling with understanding that not everything is going to be spam pick and roll and just take advantage of opposing defenses that way. Would I like to see a little bit more pick and roll from Jalen Green? Would I like to see him be able to attack opposing defenses in a variety of ways, namely, again, put the ball in his hands and just really see all the different ways that he can attack, whether it be pick and roll, whether it be isolation, whether it be getting the ball out in transition. I think we've seen little flashes of all of those parts of his game so far. But the coaching staff, as Paolo mentioned, is, you know, they're experimenting. They're moving stuff around, right? They're trying different lineups, and they're trying to figure out what does and doesn't work. So I think we're absolutely headed for a, like, post-trade deadline version of this team, you know, trades permitting for guys like Eric Gordon or some of the other vets on the roster, right? Daniel Tice, maybe if Christian Wood gets moved, things like that, things of that nature, will open up and change the dynamic even more so to what we're going to see be put out on the floor on a nightly basis. But right now, I'm not, like, overly, like, upset about the way that he's been used. I do think at times, as what kind of what I mentioned earlier, right, is there's not a clear defined hierarchy for this team. And I think that's what's causing at times a lot of, like, dysfunction on the offensive end of the floor. Is you look up and down the roster and it doesn't truly feel like there's a number one option. And I think if you were to ask any Rockets fan anywhere who they think the number one option should be, Jalen Green would be the first name out of everybody's mouth, probably. And then realistically, well,
hey, some people may say Şengün. We want to get Şengün more touches. You know, the Şengün squad or whatever decide to call them yet is very active and aggressive as well. So
that's fair. I think even the more rational Şengün fans would say, yes, Jalen Green, he's the number two overall pick. He's an absolute alpha scorer mentality, offensive weapon. Like, he should be getting the most touches. There's really not a reason that Jalen Green shouldn't be getting at minimum like 15 to 20 shots per night every single game, right? So then past that, maybe you argue, yeah, it should be Christian Wood, who's getting like the second most touches on the team. And conceivably, you could do that if you're spamming a lot of, you know, two-man action between Jalen Green and Christian Wood, or at least Christian Wood and Kevin Porter Jr. And then third option, you argue KPJ, Eric Gordon, whoever kind of has it going that night. Maybe Jayshon Tate's got it going and he's, you know, taking advantage of smaller defenders on the other team, something that to that nature. But overall, I think the main thing for this second half of the season needs to be putting an emphasis on seeing what Jalen Green can really do, because I kind of firmly believe that the Rockets have spent the first half of the season really experimenting and trying to make this Kevin Porter Jr. at point guard situation work. And while I'm not completely out on the KPJ at point experiment, I do think you have to start looking at it as, okay, we've gotten some sample, you know, some data sets on what KPJ at point looks like. He hasn't absolutely blown us away with anything incredible just yet. And granted, there's some variables in there that you have to consider with the double big lineup and the injuries and all this. But that being said, there still hasn't been a moment where you've like looked at and like, oh yeah, there's concrete evidence right there that he can be the guy for the future, right? So I think the staggering kind of allows the Rockets to pivot a little bit and kind of reassess and still focus on KPJ at point and still keep their eggs in some of that basket, but also make a bit more of an effort to get Jalen Green the ball some more during the second half of the season and really see what he's capable of and kind of focus a bit more on his development as we progress.
So one thing you just mentioned there, right, is the KPJ at point guard situation. One thing I floated out on Twitter earlier today was when Alperen Şengün comes back and, you know, maybe they get some more role clarity out there, and this may be even going into next season, we'll see. we've seen teams that have the big is doing most of the offensive creation. You know, Kobe and Powell was a tandem that was kind of like that. Jamal Murray and Jokic. Do you think we're going to go to prod first here? Do you think that there could be a future where, you know, KPJ is still the one, but you're running a lot of stuff through Şengün to where, you know, KPJ not being a traditional point guard, you know, becomes less of a factor and he can focus a little bit more on scoring, and that paradigm working with Jalen Green also being, you know, a guy that needs the ball and needs to be a dominant scorer?
Oh, for sure. I think ideally you expect Şengün to become that type of guy, because if it doesn't, then a lot of his game goes to waste, right? You in a perfect world, Şengün is the guy that is the offensive hub, let's call it like that, and then you can have KPK be the point guard on paper, and then have him run like standard point guard pick and roll stuff with the second unit with your average MLE level rim running big, and then you use his point guard abilities to run your second unit and your offense is a little more varied like that. I think Jalen fits that approach perfectly. I think he's better as an off-ball guy right now, even though he needs to develop more on-ball skills. They both can shoot. That's the primary. That's the primary requirement to playing with someone like Jokic. And then they need to develop the IQ that you see in Jason Tate and KJ Martin, which is when you don't have the ball, you need to do more stuff than the set play that is there. And we see Jalen come off screens, but like actually cutting into the paint and creating opportunities that way is something that they're not really used to doing, because KPJ just has the ball in his hands all the time, and Jalen only gets the ball when the play is set to do that. That once those guys figure that out, that's going to be key as well, and that's one of the reasons why I want Şengün to eventually get a lot of minutes with these guys, because it takes a while, and we've seen with the lineup that runs with Şengün to adapt your game to someone as unique as he is. And we saw KJ Martin get a lot better at it. We saw DJ Augustin build really good synergy with Şengün. And if you can pass the deadline, play these three guys a lot together, you really get to figure out is this the future? Is this something that you can develop, or does it just not work at all?
Jackson, over to you. You know, same thing. How do you envision a future right where, you know, Shingun's really taking on a lot of the offense creation load?
You know, that's kind of some of the optimism that I've had really with where this current Rockets young core is headed. Is you look at Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green, and there may be some redundancies in their game, right? They're arguably very similar types of players, you know, kind of combo guards, alpha level scorers. There's a hope, right, that Jalen Green's efficiency is going to be at least a little bit better, more comparable to what his numbers looked at the G League level. Kevin Porter Jr. has really struggled with his efficiency this season and just overall at the NBA level, unfortunately. So that's kind of the area of his game that you hope, you know, sees some further development. But overall, I think if you're looking at a future where you really are hoping that could be the backcourt future for the Houston Rockets, rather than necessarily worrying about, oh, is Kevin Porter Jr. a true, like, traditional point guard, I don't think you necessarily need that if Şengün is part of your big picture lineup down the line, because he can be the guy that's kind of your offensive hub, right? Your Nikola Yep. Jokic type player for this Rockets team. And if you're running a steady amount of the offense through him, yeah, there's going to be times where you need to put the ball in the hands of a guard on the wing, like a Kevin Porter Jr. or a Jalen Green, to initiate some of the offense that way. But if you're also running the offense through guys like Alperen Şengün, like Jayshon Tate, you know, utilizing some of the passing from alternative positions on the floor and getting really creative with how you generate your offense, then I don't think there's a reason why you can't necessarily have Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. be the backcourt of the future. Again, as long as they still iron out some of the other areas of their game and continue to grow, then yeah, I think that would work beautifully. And I think that's a big thing of what Rockets fans really want to see for the back half of the season is more reps out of Alperen Şengün, like obviously just more minutes for him, you know, on a nightly basis, but seeing more reps with him and with Jalen Green and with Kevin Porter Jr. and kind of seeing what that lineup can really accomplish when they're all on the floor together.
And the step that Kevin Porter Jr. has taken defensively this season, that's a big step in the right direction for that backcourt pairing working out, right? Because you can't have two defensive liabilities, you know, ideally, right? And you're not saying that Jalen or KPJ will be that, but you can hide one guy. It's hard to hide two or three guys, right? And so if KPJ and Jalen can really make a leap defensively, that makes that pairing even more viable from that standpoint. But we are getting close to time. We're going to run to a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to talk about one of the trades that happened today and, you know, how that will have a chain effect on, you know, what the Rockets are looking to do at the trade deadline. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And we are back, continuing on with Jackson Gatlin. So today, Adrian Wojnarowski reported that Cam Reddish was getting traded to the New York Knicks for a deal that included a protected 2022 first-round pick and Solomon Hill, also a 2025 second-round pick. So the value for Cam Reddish was basically a first and a second. The second is a 2025 Brooklyn second. So not, you know, most likely not going to be a super premium second. Prod, you're really the transaction guy. How do you feel about, one, the Rockets not getting in the mix for Cam Reddish? You know, there was a lot of outcry on Rockets Twitter today about the Rockets should have gotten him, the price wasn't that high, and stuff like that. And then, two, how Cam Reddish's value is going to set the market for wings going into the deadline?
Yeah, about us not pursuing Reddish, I think a lot of this team is going to change at the deadline, and Stone probably just doesn't want to lock himself into a wing that he's not sure is going to get the playing time that he wants. One of the reasons Reddish got moved is he didn't want to be in Atlanta. He wanted a bigger role. He didn't want to become a 3-and-D player. He wanted to become a more maybe Paul George type player. So the Knicks trading for him probably means that they're going to give him a bigger role. And if the Rockets traded for him, they're locking in a small forward spot. And imagine that you can't get a first for Eric Gordon, or Christian Wood trade brings in another wing. And all of a sudden you're overloaded at that position. It's already the deadline, and on deadline day you're not going to want to worry about, do I have too many wings? Because that's something that you should prepare for. So them not making the move makes sense in that way. And also the first that they got, it's a first with a little bit of upside, right? This is a first from the Charlotte Hornets. That's a team that's a borderline playoff team that pick could be, I don't know, I think 14th through like 20, and if not this year, further down the line. And if the Rockets were to make that trade, that pick that the Rockets would send is likely Miami's or Milwaukee's or a Brooklyn pick that's not too far in the future. And those are all picks that don't project to be as good. And if you can't really add another pick on top of that, you're not offering two first round picks for Cam Reddish. So it's if the Hawks had to make a choice, they probably choose the pick the Knicks have anyway. So from that perspective, there's going to be like 10, 20, 30 Cam Reddish type prospects that are going to be available while we rebuild. And if we're going to be outraged that we don't get one that's a fan favorite every single time, it's going to be a really long rebuild, because these players pop up all the time. We're done with Cam Reddish. Mo Bamba is supposed to be available right now. I mean, the legend of Caris LeVert is supposed to be available right now. So yeah, I really don't think it's a big deal that we didn't make a move for him. I think it's not who makes the first move, it's who makes the best move. And then how does that set a trend for the market, right? for the Rockets, I don't think it matters too much because Cam Reddish is a different type of prospect. The team that's looking to trade for Cam Reddish is looking for someone with high upside, and for Gordon, who can play the same position, the two or the three, that's not really what the team who's trading for Gordon is looking for. So I don't think it affects our market too much. And I mean, it's such an isolated trade. I think the market will start to set itself closer to the deadline as more and more trades happen. Front offices will look at other trades and get a better sense to the actual valuation of the players.
Jackson, same questions over to you. How do you feel about the Rockets missing out on Reddish? And how do you feel like, you know, that impacts the trade market going to the deadline?
Wow. Perfectly time coughed. I was never really in the Cam Reddish camp, largely because while I was excited about like what he brought to the table, yeah, as like a, you know, potential like 3-and-D guy, I also knew that he was like extension eligible. And it's kind of the same boat that you're potentially in with Kevin Porter Jr. this upcoming offseason as to whether or not you want to commit long-term money to him. And ultimately, the Rockets aren't at a place in their rebuild where you can comfortably say with like absolute certainty, oh yeah, we want to go ahead and commit like and lock ourselves into this player, this specific player right now, because they don't know when they're going to be good again, unfortunately, right? There's optimism that they're going to be able to like turn the corner and that they've already kind of jump-started their rebuild with this past year's draft and they've got a lot of young talent. And there's a, you know, there's a lot to be optimistic about, but until they start like actually turning it into on the court wins, and until this team makes that natural like linear progression from, okay, they're currently a lottery team, they were a lottery team, they're going to be a lottery team again this next season, maybe there's a hope that next season with the current young crop of guys maybe taking a step and whoever they bring in from the lottery, then maybe you argue, okay, they're going to be that team that's in the West kind of vying for a play-in spot, and then maybe the following season they're kind of still in the mix for the bottom seed of the playoffs. But right, that's the natural linear progression that you would hope to see from this team. And ultimately, I don't think Cam Reddish, like, necessarily, it's not that he doesn't fit that timeline. It's that he is right there on the scope of seeking a payday. And then obviously what we heard about from the reporting that he wants a bigger role. He doesn't just want to be a traditional 3-and-D guy. So that's not necessarily something you want to introduce to a locker room where you're still trying to establish who's who, right? We just talked about in segment one, the fact that it feels like this Rockets team doesn't necessarily have a hierarchy of who option one is, who option two is, you know, what exactly is the, you know, who's the alpha on this team, that kind of stuff. And hopefully that will become clearer as the season progresses, and depending on what kind of deals are made at the deadline with Eric Gordon or Christian Wood and those names, you know, either staying or going, and hopefully they clear some of that up. That's not somebody you want to introduce into an already kind of uncertain mix with what's going on, and then also introducing potentially another top draft pick, right? Because then if you throw Paolo number two into the mix and the Rockets draft Banchero, then like, okay, then you have another situation like, okay, who's the alpha on this team, right? Like, who's the number one option? What's going on here? And so ultimately, I wasn't upset that they missed out on Cam Reddish. I know that the asking price of just a first round pick was kind of whatever. And I don't necessarily think that's like going to be setting the market for per se like Eric Gordon, because I think that when you look at what Eric Gordon is producing this season, having one of his best seasons as a professional, shooting a career percentage from beyond the arc, he is going to be the type of player that pushes a playoff, like, you know, a playoff team over the edge. And he can arguably be the type of guy that wins you a playoff series. So the asking price for him, I think, was always sitting at least at like a first round draft pick at a bare minimum. But when you look at the teams that are going to be able to potentially like fork over some assets for him, you might be able to create kind of like a bidding war for Eric Gordon around the trade deadline, depending on what happens with some of the other names out there. Like Jeremy Grant might be one of the guys, right, from the Pistons, potentially on the move. I think another one of those more so like immediate contributors rather than a guy like Cam Reddish, who does have the ability to contribute like right now, versus somebody like a Jeremy Grant or an Eric Gordon, who is a more complete, well-rounded player who you know is going to be able to fulfill a certain void on your team. I think that's going to be more so the thing that sets the bar, sets the market for Eric Gordon's value overall.
So we heard that this week there were reports kind of talking about the Ben Simmons saga coming back. Atlanta was a team that was mentioned as, you know, potentially getting in the mix of the Ben Simmons sweepstakes. And the thing that was reportedly holding up that trade was that Philly sounded like they were looking to offload Tobias Harris's contract to a team. So that way, you know, some people, Brian Windhorst on his podcast speculated that that may even be a move down the line to start looking towards bringing in James Harden in free agency, right? The Tobias Harris contract is not pretty, but, you know, three first round picks, those are would be nice too, maybe something along those lines. How would y'all feel? You know, the Rockets are a team that have been thrown around ad nauseum of getting into the mix of the Ben Simmons trade because the front office is familiar. Windhorst has talked as well about the Morey, he calls it the quadrangle of the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Rockets, and the Sacramento Kings, right? Because those front offices are so familiar with one another that they may be the ones that get involved in the Ben Simmons trade, even if it's not, you know, getting Ben Simmons himself. How do y'all feel about the Rockets potentially even taking on something like a Tobias Harris contract in exchange for, you know, some sort of draft capital or young player capital as well?
I'd do it in a heartbeat. Yeah. I mean, I mean, that's kind of one of those where it's like, you know, as far as the NBA life cycle is concerned for teams, right? The Rockets find themselves at the bottom of the scrap heap right now. They are true blue in the midst of a rebuild. And one of the things that you have to be doing when you're in this part of the rebuild is you have to be smart about your asset management. And one of those things that you can do is you can be that team that takes on bad contracts in exchange for future assets, future liquidity or young prospects, that kind of thing. Utilizing your cap space that you're not actively using on signing top-end free agents, that kind of thing. Because let's be honest, the Rockets, again, aren't going to be competitive within the next 2 to 3 seasons, likely anyways. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't hurt them if you're going to hamstring your cap situation for the next couple years, 2-3 years with a Tobias Harris contract or something, you know, of, you know, in an equivalent sense to that contract. Maybe if it's not this situation, but maybe another one presents itself further down the line. The idea is they need to be absorbing these bad contracts and kind of greasing the wheels as a third team. And this would be a hugely missed opportunity if Rafael Stone didn't get in there and be involved as a third team. I'm sitting here thinking that if there is a Ben Simmons deal at the deadline, I would be incredibly impressed if somehow like the Rockets or like the Thunder weren't actively involved as like a third team trying to help facilitate and take back bad contracts and receive a little bit of incentive for doing so.
Yeah, and when you think about it, people will say, oh, only if they take John Wall. No, not only if they take John Wall. It's been talked about Rockets trading Eric Gordon. It's been talked about the Rockets trading Christian Wood. If you take Christian Wood and Eric Gordon and you add either Daniel Theis or more than likely DJ Augustin, because his contract is pretty much expiring, it has a little, really small guarantee next year, that's enough money to take on Tobias Harris. And then people will think, but why do we want to take on Tobias Harris? He's not like John Wall. He's not someone who you can sit. But he's also not a bad player. Even if you draft, let's say, Banchero or Kevari Smith, you can still play those two as your wings. It will be a little bit clunky because Harris is not quite as quick as he used to be. He's more of a power forward now. But it still works, and you would get, maybe not three, but 2 first-round picks, you'd get for sure. And those, while people say that they're tired of getting more first, they want actual, like, palpable things. 2 first-round picks, like, the Rockets don't have that many. They spent 2 this last draft, so compared to what a normal team has, that's 1 per year, the Rockets are only at a +2 compared to that, so I would definitely consider it. And then when you look at the Harris contract, it's bad. It goes up to $40 million. It's this year, next year, and the year after, and a lot of people look at the year after as the year that the Rockets need to make a move to be competitive again. But that year, even with the Tobias Harris contract, the Rockets still project to have a max slot in that season. And even if, in the incredible off chance that you have 2 max guys that want to join you, it's an expiring deal. It's not hard to move. It can even be better if you're trying to do a sign and trade with someone. Like, it hurts flexibility a little bit, but it's not nothing that drastic. And having him and Wall at the same time, while it might look really bad on the salary sheets, you have 70, almost $80 million like connected to these guys that they're not part of the future. It doesn't really matter because the Rockets aren't going to be good. It's typical for rebuilding teams to like rent their cap space to good teams to take those dumps and those picks, because even if we had the cap space, nobody would want to come here, and we're not good enough. Cap space, being effective with your cap space towards having good players only matters when you're trying to win. When you're rebuilding, having John Wall making $40 million or having, I don't know, two other guys, or having like Eric Gordon and Ricky Rubio making $20 million each, just because it's $40 million, it doesn't matter. It's about you having nothing better to do with that space, and if, and I'm confident, and it's been rumored so far that if the Sixers are indeed desperate to move Harris, if they think they have a shot at Harden, I think the Rockets should be all over that, with or without John Wall being involved.
The trend with players recently has been that, let's say take someone like Zion, for example. The expectation is that Zion, A, does not want to be in New Orleans the long term, and then B, that Zion will take an extension from the Pelicans and then ask to be traded later, right? So I think just the way the league is going in that sense, having just this open cap space versus having movable salary, like you said, if Tobias Harris is on expiring, that way you can send that salary back in a trade, I think that's more advantageous. We've seen times even this year where you have teams that need some sort of mid-level salary to send back in a trade, and they may not have the contracts that can get up to that number. So having Tobias Harris's salary, it's a lot of money. It's not as much as John Wall's even is, right? John Wall's, I think he's going to be at, what, 47 this year? So 37's a lot, but it's not, you know, that peak number. Also, we'll see what the cap does. We'll see if a new TV deal comes in. You know, that salary could be less damaging by the time they're looking to trade it. You know, but just in general, I think I'm with both of you guys. The Rockets need to be not necessarily an OKC level Superfund site where they're just, you know, cycling in tons and tons of bad contracts, but, you know, a few deals like that where you can, you know, stack up some important picks, especially if they could get those picks unprotected. That would be very ideal. You know, Daryl Morey, he did the Westbrook trade with us, and he didn't even let those picks go out with a little bit of protection on them. But that Harris contract, you know, not great. We may have them under a gun if they think that they have a chance at Harden and they're trying to set themselves up for that. Then, you know, you can use that as a leverage point. Like, hey, you want James Harden, you got to have somebody with this contract, you know, maybe make it top one protected and that's it, or something along those lines. But Jackson, Prod, I think we're going to call it for this segment. When we come back, we're going to do some predictions for the trade deadline and possibly a little bit of Kings preview. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And we're back, rolling into the last segment here. So we have a little format we're going to use for this. We're testing it out. We are going to have three predictions, and we're each going to rank how confident we are in these things happening, and you know, maybe predict some results of those things as well. So,
minor disclaimer: if anybody picks five, meaning you're straddling the fence between it happening and not happening, you suck. Just putting that out.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. I don't know about Prod, but yeah, fully agree there. So, our first, we're going to start with the spiciest one. Christian Wood getting moved. So I will go first. My confidence that Christian Wood gets moved is a 9 out of 10. I think Christian Wood is out of here. Yeah. I think Christian Wood is out of here. I think this is the opportune time to move him based on, you know, all the discussions that we've had this whole season of, if you trade him next year, he's an expiring. His salary is very movable, very manageable. His value is at its highest. I think we're going to have two good teams. Well, not good teams, but two viable teams that are going to be interested in his services. And I think for me personally, the incident that happened during the Nuggets game was what really pushed me over the edge here. And I think because of his stature in the team and how that event transpired, how we saw Coach Silas speak about that event afterwards, you know, saying the KPJ and the Christian Wood events are very different. I think that is the direction it's going to go. Now, for who that trade is going to involve, I think the Kings are a team that is going to be very desperate to do something. They haven't made the playoffs in a long time. They want to make the playoffs. That's been widely, you know, discussed and known. Again, like we mentioned before, Monty McNair is a guy that worked in Houston, has a lot of familiarity with the Rockets front office. I think the level of desperation there is very high, and they're going to want to get some guys in there to try to make a push for the playoffs because, you know, if you look at the standings right now, it's pretty wide open. If they get two guys in there that are real impact guys, they could make a late push and, you know, get into the play-in or even get into a position where, you know, they have advantageous seating for a play-in. So that's my confidence level in Christian Wood, and that's my prediction of where he's going to go. Jackson, our special guest, we will let you go next.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to go with a 7 on Christian Wood getting traded. I genuinely think that this Rockets organization, you know, and I was kind of straddling the fence on this, you know, throughout this season, but like you, Don, I think that situation, especially when you kind of go back and listen to Steven Silas's comments on, you know, how that situation or how the two situations were so totally different from Christian Wood to Kevin Porter Jr. With how they handled the like halftime incidents and whatnot. I think if you're kind of reading between the lines, I think they view the Christian Wood situation as a bit more severe, maybe. And ultimately,
would you say crazy and cannot be fixed?
Shout out! Wow, as we are about 1 year removed from the you know the infamous Harden speech, right? Yeah, it might be crazy, and it might could maybe not be fixed. No. You know, I don't think you necessarily have to move in this deadline, but again, I'm going to put my confidence level at about a 7. And the team that I keep circling back to repeatedly that I think would just be such a perfect fit for Christian Wood is the Charlotte Hornets. And a name over there that I'm, you know, really interested in for the Houston Rockets is PJ Washington. I think that if the Hornets could be, you know, talked into including PJ Washington in a potential Christian Wood deal, I think you almost have to really, really consider it. I think he's a really exciting prospect, somebody that you can bring in, kind of, you know, mesh with this young Rockets core. And as far as like filler, like they could easily throw in like, you know, Washington and like Plumlee or something to get up to Christian Wood's salary level. So that's not a hard deal to construct whatsoever. And Christian Wood fits into what they're trying to do over there beautifully, which is play zero defense and just completely outgun all of their opponents. So yeah, I think those are my thoughts and confidence level on Christian Wood getting moved.
All right, Prague, go ahead. Unmute and go ahead.
Yeah, we'd like to hear your beautiful voice. That's cool. We still can't hear you.
Okay. Prod, you're still muted, brother.
Okay. I bet money his headset like disabled because it didn't detect any input for a while.
Really?
It's probably Prod, a gaming headset and it probably did that.
Prod, can you go make sure your input's correct still?
Is this fixed?
There we go. Yeah, we can hear it now. All right, go ahead. I'll edit that out. Don't worry about it.
10 out of 10 podcasts.
All right.
Absolutely. All right. So yeah, Prague, go ahead and tell us, you know, your thoughts here.
I mean, who could have predicted that I would be giving the lowest rating considering my stance on the subject for the longest time. I'm going with a 6, and that's just because we've been told by Raphael Stone last deadline that you should always bet on the status quo, and it's always more likely it's always more likely that nothing changes than a trade to happen, right? And considering that, I'm still going over 50%. I'm still giving it 60% just because, like y'all said, I think the that situation after the Denver game really like made the Rockets made up their minds. I think from an asset standpoint and then from just an asset management standpoint, it always made sense. To me, what was missing was they were attached to Christian Wood as someone who they found, as someone who is Silas's like guy, and therefore they wouldn't be looking to move him unless a really good package came in. Then after that incident, the way that his effort has been varying so much and the way that they addressed, like y'all said, that KPJ was a blip in the radar and Christian Wood was something more serious, it feels like they're doing damage control and that they're trying to ride it off until the deadline, and maybe a month from now nobody remembers that. But yeah, I think he'll be moved. I think he's one of the best centers on the market, so it only makes sense.
All right, so our second category.
Wait. Where do you think he's going to be moved?
I was trying to dodge the bullet because y'all took my two destinations. So I'll do the spicy hot take. Since I don't have a trade in mind immediately, I'll throw out two. I'll throw out the Bulls just because they just lost. What's his name? DJJ. I always forget his name. Yeah, Derrick Jones Jr. They just lost him for 6 weeks. He'll be back before the playoffs, of course, but he was always someone who... And he's a low-tier role player, right? And he's someone making $10 million. It would be a waste for the Bulls not to look to capitalize on that salary to get a better piece. They have Patrick Williams out for the season. Maybe, I'm not saying straight up for Christian Wood, but maybe the Rockets add the Miami first, and maybe that's enough. Then I'll point to one of those typical teams desperate to make the play-in, a GM that's under fire. I'll talk about the Pelicans. Just because they did extend Jonas. They do have Zion, but I think ultimately they'll think that Valanciunas is not a good fit with Zion, and Christian Wood is exactly what you'd expect. He's someone who's really long, who can sell themselves on as a rim protector next to Zion, and maybe they get desperate enough.
All right, so our second category is Eric Gordon trades. My confidence in an Eric Gordon trade is 10. I think that's a pretty safe bet. I think if Eric Gordon didn't get injured last year, he would have already been traded. As of right now, I'm going to take the safe pick, and I'm going to take Eric Gordon going to Cleveland. You know, we've heard the Cleveland interest reported a number of times. I think Jake Fisher just reiterated it again today. I do want Eric Gordon to go to the Cavaliers and freeze out Evan Mobley and ruin his rookie of the year chance. So that's why I'm hoping he gets sent there. And obviously I want Eric Gordon to do well wherever he goes. He hasn't taken the PJ Tucker route or the James Harden route. You know, he's been a loyal soldier and, you know, played well. Even, you know, last night had an amazing, incredible game. When I got to watch Eric Gordon play live the last time, you know, you're there and you just see how deep some of those shots he spots up for are and how strong he is on drives going to the rim and, you know, how tough a lot of those finishes are. You know, Eric Gordon, I think you don't really hear him championed as one of these guys is a great finisher at the rim. You know, you hear guys like Kyrie and even on a lower level, you know, Tate, right? Tate's a guy has all these crazy crafty finishes, but you know, Eric Gordon's another guy that he makes a lot of tough finishes. So, you know, I'll be rooting for Eric Gordon wherever he goes, and my pick for that is the Cleveland Cavaliers. So Jackson got to go first in the last one. Prob, we're gonna let you go first on this one. You know, what's your confidence level in Eric Gordon getting traded, and you know, what do you think the destination is going to be?
All right, so the probability of him getting traded, for the weirdest reason, I'll go with a 9, because there is still a chance that he gets hurt before the deadline, knock on wood. Yeah, there is. And there is wishing also a injury. Possibility... There's also a possibility that he...
We are manifesting good health for Eric Gordon, okay?
Yeah, no, for sure.
And safe for the rest of...
Good health for everyone, career. Not just Eric Gordon.
Specifically Eric Gordon.
But then, just because there is still a world where the Rockets don't get offered the first round pick, and if they don't, I mean, if they don't, the only reason they don't is because of the contract, and next season, and maybe they think, next season he's basically expiring or has a team option. Maybe they think they'll get a first guaranteed next year, so that's why I went with a 9. I mean, it's still 90%, and then for the destination. I'll be a good host. I'll make it easier for Jackson, and I'll say Philly, because I think we'll be involved in a Simmons trade. I think that's one of our next topics. But and considering that they had, even if we aren't, they have Danny Green, who's according to Philly fans not as good as we think Danny Green is, and they have Korkmaz or the guy that came from the Jazz, Niang, and those guys are guys that are enough to match salaries. So, and Daryl Morey is someone who knows, who's familiar with Eric Gordon, and he knows that when Eric Gordon's healthy, Eric Gordon's a different beast. So I'll go with them, and then if there is a Simmons trade, then Eric Gordon more than likely has to be going somewhere, and for conveniency reasons, maybe Philly's that place.
Jackson, over to you.
I'm going to go with an 11. It's breaking the scale, so I'm going even further than you, Don. I think that ultimately, you know, Eric Gordon is the type of guy that you want to try and move in season. He's not necessarily the type of guy that you are. I mean, I feel like they can get more for him, right, in season, right? There's going to be teams that are really looking to make a push, really trying to solidify their playoff rotations. You know, teams that think that they can make a little bit of noise this season, whereas, you know, in the offseason, everybody's much higher on their team. They're like, oh yeah, we don't need the help. We don't need the added push, you know, this summer. So I'm going to go with an 11. It's breaking the scale. It's going to be sad to see Eric Gordon go. I just want to chime in with that, right? As Eric Gordon has been a consummate professional through everything. He has been here for some of the biggest moments in Rockets history. The last remaining member of the 17-18 team that we all hold near and dear to our hearts. So it's going to be a really sad day when Eric Gordon is gone. As far as the location, selfishly, I'd really like to see him be, you know, paired up again with Chris Paul and the Phoenix Suns. I don't think that that's necessarily a likely destination for him. Unfortunately, it's kind of hard to make the salary numbers work, although the Suns do have like a bevy of their future picks. So like as far as like contenders that have almost near like unlimited draft capital, the Suns could really choose to cash in their chips and like throw like two or three future firsts at a potential target this deadline and really solidify their team going into the playoffs if they feel like they need it. But since they've, you know, been flirting with the one seed, you know, either one or two seed all season long, they're clearly one of the top teams in the West and the top teams in the league. They might not necessarily feel like they need to cash in those picks. So that said, it's kind of a safe-ish bet, kind of alongside like the Cavs one, but I think that the Toronto Raptors are a team that could be looking to make a strong push. They finally got healthy about a week ago, and they've, you know, ripped off a bunch of wins in a row since finally getting their roster all back on the floor together. That was a team that I was really high on coming into the season. I thought the Raptors were going to be a lot better than they started out the season as, and clearly just with COVID protocols and injuries to OG Anunoby and Siakam, they just haven't been a whole team. But Eric Gordon, somebody who could really flesh them out and give them a much needed scoring punch, either coming off the bench or somebody that they can play small with and close games with. He's an absolute bona fide veteran presence, and the numbers work really, really easily. They could send Goran Dragic down. The Rockets just waive him immediately. He can, you know, go play for another contender, another team, whatever they want to do. And they can, you know, attach a first to Dragic and just, you know, call it a day. So that'd be a really clean and simple one-for-one trade. Not necessarily like the sexiest of trades, but at least it's out there. And that's going to be my safety pick bet sort of as to where EG lands.
All right. So our last prediction that we're going to touch on here is getting involved in the Ben Simmons trade. In the last segment, we really outlined the proximity of that front office with ours and the other front offices that, you know, have Rockets ties, the Timberwolves and the Kings. My confidence level in getting involved in a Ben Simmons trade is a little bit lower. I think it would be advantageous for us to get involved in it, but I don't necessarily think... I think that Ben Simmons trade is holding up a lot of the trade market. I think a lot of teams that want to get peripherally involved in that are holding other moves until that kind of shakes itself out. The Rockets have some good pieces that could get involved in that deal, but the Rockets really don't have young prospects that they would be comfortable moving to get involved in a deal like that potentially. I think that is one limiting factor. So I'm going to go with a 4 on getting involved in the Ben Simmons deal. If we were to get involved, I think Eric Gordon, you know, someone that we've talked about, is likely on the way out. I think Christian Wood, you may merge those because of the level of salary that's going to be being moved in that deal. You know, Simmons makes upwards of 30. Is he 35, Prod, do you know off the top?
33, I believe, right now this year.
Okay. So you're going to have at least, you know, 125% in either direction of that salary going out to teams, right, to make the money matching work and stuff like that. So I think that's going to be my prediction is if they get involved in that type of deal, you're going to see likely Augustine, Gordon, and Wood moved just to get to the number. And yeah, so Jackson, we're going to go to you second here. What is your confidence level and your prediction?
Well, I do think we're going to see a team be involved in that Simmons deal, and I would love to see it be the Rockets. Like you said, Don, I think it's just kind of hard with some of the numbers that the Rockets have to work with, and I think they're also going to be kind of, again, really transfixed on getting Eric Gordon moved out the door is, again, to go back to our previous prediction. So I'm actually going to go with like a 3. So even just below yours, I still think it's possible that the Rockets are a team that gets, you know, maybe involved, and maybe there's some like extra convoluted like 3-4 team deal where they're able to like two birds, one stone, and get Eric Gordon out the door and take back some bad money and help kind of grease the wheels or facilitate. But overall, you know, I think that their main goal is going to be clearing out some space, you know, just with the rotation by getting Eric Gordon out the door, securing some future assets, and also, you know, trying to move on from Christian Wood. I think those are going to be the main goals at the deadline for this Rockets team.
Prod, over to you.
Yeah, so since 5 is the forbidden number, I'll go with a 6.
You can go with a 5. I'm just going to ridicule you for it, for straddling the 5.
I refuse. I'm going to go with a 6, and why is that? I think the proximity with the front office is just too much. I think if Morey wanted to move Harris, I think those 4 front offices are probably in contact all the time, and the Rockets would probably be the first call for a salary dump, just because I think the Kings are really pressured to make the playoffs, so not really good salary dump place. Same with the Wolves. So the closest team willing to take a salary dump to Daryl Morey is probably the Rockets. So I'm going to give it a 6, and I'm going to say, just as a disclaimer, that I think it's a 6, but I think it's a 8 that the Rockets are not the team getting Ben Simmons. I think likely what would happen is, and like what I think is happening is, I think they could have traded Eric Gordon for Rubio in the first, or one of the possibilities we floated already. I think they could have done it already if they didn't want to wait for the Simmons deal. I think the Rockets are the ones holding it up. I think the Cavs would be happy to have done it already. I think they aren't a team that is interested in getting Simmons himself. So they would have done the Gordon deal already. And when I mean it's tough because the only way I see them getting involved is if both Christian Wood and Eric Gordon are going out at the same time. And and considering that, maybe six is a little bit optimistic, but I'll stick with it. I think it's more likely than not they'll get involved, and hopefully I'm right. I mean, if I am right, I'm going to brag about this for a very long time.
All right, so that's gonna do it for our predictions. I promised a Kings preview, so I'm just gonna run through this really quick. The Kings have a lot of great players that Prodigy personally is interested in getting, namely Tyrese Haliburton. They also have Davion Mitchell, who his nickname is Off Night, so we will see what that looks like. Jalen and KPJ getting defended by him. De'Aaron Fox, the local guy out of Cypress area. Love watching Houston guys play and succeed in the league for sure. And, you know, other than that, not a whole lot on this roster to worry about. I think the Rockets, hopefully they can get two more wins here and keep the chemistry going, because that's really what this team needs right now. Get some wins and get that thing moving in the right direction, coming off of, you know, the incident like we mentioned against the Nuggets. So there's your little Kings preview. The Rockets are at the Kings for both of those games. So y'all have anything you want to add on the Kings?
You cannot make a reference to the Kings and will not let me further the agenda that I've been pushing for the last four days.
I teed you up for it.
I mean, dude, I think that Haliburton is the best fit along with the best player that's available that the Rockets should target. I think he's a great shooter. He's a really high IQ guy. He's someone who always knows where to be on defense. I think he's someone who has a size. He's 6'5". He's shooting 43% from three. He's a great passer. He's one of the best assist turnover ratios in the league for guys above five assists. He has, I think, near seven with two turnovers. That's nuts. He's the perfect level-headed guy to have next to an explosive guy like Jalen Green. And if the Kings are out of their mind and if they're pressured enough to a point where they're willing to move him, I think the Rockets should be all over it. Even if they're not getting him from the Kings, imagine the Kings need Haliburton to go after Ben Simmons, I think the Rockets should be all over calling Philly and saying, hey, that's a young guy, you have Tyrese Maxey, we're willing to give you a really good package for him. And I think if you have Jalen Green, Haliburton and Sengun, that's a really good foundation. You have another pick coming in this year, and you have, I mean, it's one of my favorite players, as you can see, but it's just such a good fit. And I mean, if I had one wish for the deadline, is if Haliburton is available, please pounce on it. I mean, players like that at this young, still under rookie contracts, rarely are available. So if it is, man, please, I'll give up. I'll just quantify it right now. I'd be willing to give up whatever you get for Christian Wood plus two or three first round picks, as long as it's not ours this year, ours next year, or Brooklyn. No, even Brooklyn 2027, if it's necessary. Like, I'm that high on Tyrese Haliburton.
All right, Jackson, you have any thoughts on this upcoming road stint at the Kings?
They need to pick up at least one win against the Kings. Like, that's my chime in here, is like, I think that ultimately, and this kind of goes back to one thing that we mentioned, so this will be my throwaway as we're wrapping up the episode, you know, talking about KPJ's growth defensively.
Yeah.
I think he's absolutely grown as like a one-on-one, like man-to-man defender, and he's much more locked in. But I think one of the reasons that we've seen the Rockets really regress over these last handful of games is because the understanding and team defense element, like the help defense, the rotations from both Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green have been really rough to watch, as well as the rest of the team. But like, namely, like those two guys are the culprits of a lot of miscommunication and breakdowns of the Rockets defense. And so ultimately, I think one of the reasons that we saw the Rockets having a little bit more success against the Spurs is those guys were staggered. And so rather than having two of those guys on the floor, having that many more breakdowns, that much more miscommunication, there were some defensive sets out there or defensive lineups out there where those breakdowns just weren't happening, where the rotations were actually pretty quality, and where the Rockets had their, I think, one of their best defensive performances until DeJounte Murray decided to do his best like Tracy McGrady impersonation and try to flip the script on 13 and 35 at the end of the game. Like, except for that, I mean, I felt like the Rockets did a pretty commendable job defensively, probably their best played game on that end of the floor in a long, long time. So ultimately, I want to see that trend continue against the Kings. And I think it's really nice to be able to have these little back-to-back stretches where you play the same game, same team in back-to-back games, because you're able to then take any issues, mistakes from the first matchup. And it's kind of like a mini playoff series, right? So like they can sit down, they go over the film, and they immediately get to address and fix any of those errors. So if there is anything glaring, any major issues in game one against the Kings, they can go back and immediately iron those wrinkles out in game two. So I really like these little, again, you know, back-to-back mini series that the NBA has been doing this season. This is like the, I feel like this is like the second or third one that the Rockets have had. They had the LA one. Did they have another one too? I feel like they had one more past the LA one.
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
They for sure at least had the LA one. They might have had one more past that. But again, I'm a big fan of these. And, you know, maybe it's just a thing that they're doing because of COVID scheduling. But like, I kind of hope that the NBA keeps these as part of their scheduling like plans moving forward in subsequent seasons. So
they had the Thunder back to back.
That's right.
Yeah. So, all right, but that's going to do it for us. Jackson, go ahead and tell the people where they can find your stuff.
Just everything at JT Gatlin on Twitter. That's where I yell about everything. Go follow me there. All that good stuff.
Paolo, go ahead and tell the people where they can find your recently renovated Twitter account.
You call me Prod on every occasion except for when you're asking me. You're almost reminding me that my handle is new. You can find me at PaulAlvesNBA. That's PaulAlvesNBA. Everything I do, from podcasts to articles to live shows, will find itself linked on there.
And yeah, that is exactly why I do that. just in case you're wondering. Of course, you can find all my stuff on Twitter at Don Knock. Follow the pod at Apollo Launchpad. Follow the Apollo HUU main account. Subscribe, rate, and review on Apple and Spotify. Also, follow the Twitch account. We're going to be doing another watch party on Friday for the Rockets game against the Kings, which we just, you know, so eloquently previewed a little bit ago. Apollo HOU on Twitch as well. And that's going to do it for us. So until next time, be safe and go Rockets.